This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. We're in the Sky Bet Championship. Just in case you've been hiding under your duvet for the past few days, Wayne Rooney was made Derby County's permanent manager. In Sky Bet League One, Rochdale made it three consecutive draws with an aggregate score of 10-10. And in Sky Bet League Two, the Newport County goalkeeper Tom King scored from his own six-yard box. And across the EFL, in Clement, no relation, weather added to the fixture pileup caused by COVID. All information was up to date at the time of recording. It's the official EFL podcast. They've got one of the Sky Bet Championship's most consistently prolific scorers. After a year out with injury, they've just brought back one of the division's most dangerous playmakers. And they must have a very strong recruitment magnet because Tony Mowbray's Blackburn Rovers are also one of the premium destinations for Premier League loanees. Which gives me the opportunity to say Tony's loanees. Do you get it, Tony? Not bad, is it? Listen, I have to ask you, I mean, for me, you have got some wonderful footballers on the books that you're working with day in, day out, Tony.
Yeah, well, I like footballers, to be honest. I think I like technical footballers. I think the journey I've been on at Blackburn, you know, I inherited the club in, what was it, 2017. We had 15 games. I think we only lost three of them games, we went down on the last day, having won at Brentford 3-1. And we are to all re-acclimatise. I flew over to India to see whether I still had a job. I'd like to think we'd done enough to show that we could manage footballers and try and turn things around. We didn't manage to do enough to avoid that relegation, even though we had some great results in them last 15 games and the team started to take shape. Anyway, it was like a journey we've been on since then. The first 11 or 12 games in League One, we were trying to play a brand of football that I like, a technical game, a dominate possession of the ball. Felt we had better players than League One and we should be able to do that. And yet, what I found was a lot of teams sat behind the ball. We did have lots of possession and we could lose some games. I think we lost maybe three of them first 11. And I decided with Danny Graham at the football club to go more direct. We'd signed Dak by that point and the combination just clicked, really. We missed out the 4-5-1 or the 5-4-1, all them nine men behind the ball. We played off the front. Graham is as good as anybody I've ever seen with his body, with his hips and his backside at keeping the ball in and around the box. And Dak, he did what he does. I first came across Dak when I was at Coventry and he played for Gillingham. We were 4-0 up before half time, and yet this kid playing for Gillingham was tackling everybody. He was like a one-man attack for them. He was shooting from everywhere. He was beating men. He was nutmegging people. And we brought Dakie in and he took to it really quickly. He developed relationships really fast. His talent got him respect in the football club. And we had a great season. I don't know, 96, 97 points that season. We finished actually behind Wigan, which was a great chase for the championship to get out of League One. But we did enough to get out of League One, scored a lot of goals, won a lot of games. And since then, we've been consolidating, really. I mean, that first year, you have to consolidate back in the championship because the gulf is big. The championship have got a lot of teams, obviously, teams that have come out of the Premier League with huge salaries and huge wage bills. And we consolidated, 16th, 17th in the league. I think last year, the intention was to get better. We did. I don't know what we got last year, 64 points or something. I've been challenging them this season to push for top six. This is Blackburn Rovers, who won the Premier League in 1995. It's a big club. Its infrastructure behind the scenes is a Premier League club with the training facilities and the training ground and, you know, Ewood Park. And we had to sort of reset our parameters, really, of having a mentality that we should be competing at the top six, not happy to be mid-table. And we obviously started this season with a different mindset, really, a different brand. Danny Graham had moved on, Richie Smallwood had moved on, Charlie Mulgrew had moved on, three players who were the bedrock of our League One season, really. And, you know, I think Mulgrew scored 18 goals in League One from centre-half. It's Graham and Dak scored scored phenomenal amounts. And anyway, we moved on from being direct and going back to what I believe in, really, and how I believe teams should be playing, dominating the ball, dominating possession, scoring goals, creating chances. And generally, we started the season very, very well. You know, we scored five in our first home game against Wickham, and then we went to Derby, scored four. We scored fours and threes pretty regularly. Armstrong got himself at the top of the goal-scoring charts. Harvey Elliott had come in and was amazing feeling his feet, really, on his left foot when he steps inside. There's the way he can spin that ball around the corner and Armstrong's through on goal. It's like Adam run as soon as Harvey gets it and we're in. And we scored goals, we're really exciting. And everybody was on board, really. I think we've stuttered, though. We've lost our consistency. I mean, we've probably had over the piece 8 or 9 positive COVID tests over a long period of time, which is interrupted. Yeah. We've lost all three centre-halves. As I sit here talking to you now, we've lost Daniel Ayala, Scotty Wharton, who started the season at centre-half. Daniel Ayala, who we signed, is an experienced player who's had two promotions. And Derek Williams has got a long term. He took his hamstring off the bone. And so three centre-halves are missing. And we've just struggled a little bit. We've been playing Bradley Johnson, the midfield player at centre-half. We went through a spell of no right backs at all, and we played a left back at right back. We've just hit this period where haven't been able to have consistency of selection like the start of the season, and the game's coming so thick and fast, literally every 3 days. It's we've just lost the consistency, and yet we still feel, you know, win three on the bounce, and we're straight back in that challenge of the top six again. And that's what our aim is, to keep pushing on and keep trying to win matches.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's lots of compliments I could pay you. And thank you very much, because you're a very cheap round. You've answered about my next three questions in your answer. No, that's all right, mate. That's all right. But, I mean, what a compliment that Liverpool are willing to lend you Harvey Elliott and see the potential and know how you like to play. And, I mean, Gerard Branthwaite as well is very, very highly rated too, and Everton have just, I mean, that's a lovely compliment, isn't it, Tony, that those clubs trust you with some of their future crown jewels?
Well, I think it's happened for a while. I think back to Coventry, really, and again, I don't know, I probably did speak to you a few times at Coventry, but we had Ryan Kent, who moved on for $7 million to Glasgow Rangers, and he's doing exceptionally well up there. Of course, he was a young boy, his first loan from Liverpool, and so there's history of was looking after their young players for them. I think Jack Stevens, who's now playing in the Premier League for Southampton, came to Coventry as well and played it for us as a young player. I've had a few players who we've been trusted with on first loans, really, and Jacob Murphy, who had a £12 million move to Newcastle, was a first loan also. And so it's good. Liverpool, we've played Liverpool two of the last 3 years in pre-seasons, and Jurgen's obviously seen our team and likes the way we play, and I think he hopefully trusts us to put the right habits into his young players. And Harvey is a very, very young player, of course. You know, he's not 20, he's literally 17 and a boy, but he has amazing talent, and you know, I'm sure he has a big, big future in front of him.
You know what? For me, my joy of football is always the people, what makes them tick. But I love listening to you talk in such technical terms because of the warmth you have for this unbridled talent. The other one I alluded to in the introduction was obviously Adam Armstrong. He's already matched his tally for last season. So are you quite nervous with where are we now? What have we got left on the transfer? About another 10 days to go. Are you a bit nervous that somebody comes and, let's be honest, nicks an absolute prime 3-point taker from you?
No, I'm not nervous at all. I've spoken to a few Premier League managers about one or two of our players over the last week or two. And listen, I'm always honest. I find it very difficult talking to anybody to to bend the answers, really. I'll tell it as it is. And, you know, Adam Armstrong is still only a very young boy. Is he 22? He might be 23.
You're asking me a lot of questions, Mogger. They're your players. It's your team.
I know that, but I've had Adam, I had Adam at Coventry, didn't I? So I've had Adam twice. Yeah. Adam scored 20 goals for me in his league season at Coventry on his first loan out of Newcastle. And eventually, thankfully, we managed to sign him permanently. Is he ready for the Premier League? I believe that young players should play football, really. And with total respect to Adam, and this is not me saying, oh, he's not ready. This is me telling one or two managers that he's still a young boy. He's still got lots to learn. And, you know, I wouldn't see him as the answer to go to the Premier League now and start banging in loads of goals. I think in the Championship, it's a totally different level of football. And I think Adam Armstrong's asset rich, he's lightning fast off the mark, he plays on shoulders, and if you have a quality of a Harvey Elliott or a Lewis Holtby or these footballers who can put the ball in the grass behind, he can score off both feet, he can score all sorts of goals, he can shoot from distance, he can go around the goalie, he can side foot it in with both feet, he's very, very clinical. I think he'd have to, if he does go to the Premier League, and I'm sure he will go to the Premier League at one stage, our hope, of course, is he goes with us and takes us there because he scores so many goals. But I'm not, you know, I'm a football man. I understand how football works. And, you know, sometimes as a club, I know our club do, we sort of estimate what our squad's worth and stuff. And what price do you put on Adam Armstrong? You know, if a Premier League club comes trying to buy a young player, Championship clubs very rarely can turn down the numbers that they can afford, really, because if they want them, they can pay whatever it is. And so it's very difficult for me to look my players in their eye the way I talk to them. I'm not a father figure to them, but I tell them how much I love my players, really. I want them all to succeed. I want them all to play in the Premier League and have the glory and score the goals. As I constantly tell them, I want to sit in my armchair one day and watch you young players playing in the Premier League, watching Match of the Day or whatever it is I'm watching, and seeing you do what you do, whether that's defending, scoring. And that's part of what I'm about, really, is developing young players. At the same time, I want to win. You have to win. It's my job. You know, Blackburn Rovers fans don't want me just to develop young players to go and play in the Premier League for somebody else. They want us to develop players to score goals for us and help us compete at the top end of the Championship to try and get to the Premier League, and that's what we're trying to do. I think the likes of Rothwell is an amazing talent as well, and one or two people ask about Joe Rothwell, who we brought in from Oxford. You know, young Nyambi is. We've got lots of young players. And so what I think about football management is when I leave this club, whenever it is, next week, next year, 5 years' time, you leave it in a better place than when you found it. And I think this club's got assets. It's got footballers can play in the Premier League now. They're the young footballers who are developing. Some of them are loanees, of course, who go back to their parent clubs. But some of them we've bought, and we're developing, and we're on a journey, really. I understand football. Everybody wants to get there today, tomorrow, as quick as you can, and that sometimes is a problem, particularly in the world we live of social media and radio stations and newspapers. Everybody's got a platform to tell you what you're doing wrong and how you're picking the wrong team and why you make the wrong substitutions and blah, blah, blah. But I think we're on a journey at Blackburn. The young players are enjoying it, I think. We have to find a level of consistency, but I'm hopeful that we can finish the season strong as we get some of our injuries back, get some stability in defence. I'm hoping Jared Branthwaite from Everton, despite his very tender age of 18, I've seen him train three times with us and play one game, and he plays like an experienced player. He's just calm, he's steady, he wins his headers, he passes brilliantly with both feet into the midfield or drops it over the top. For such a young boy, he's an amazingly calm individual. And so I hope that we can find some stability now, pick a pretty consistent team and hopefully get back to consistent victories.
I think the biggest compliment that I can pay you, Tony, is that when I would do features on Blackburn Rovers over the years for the Football League show, radio interviews, all the rest of it, there was always the ownership I don't mean this to sound horrendously disrespectful, but the circus that surrounded the club. You have completely, at least nationally, quietened that. I don't know what it's like on the ground. I don't know what it's like amongst the supporters. But those headlines involving the owners have just disappeared from the national headlines. I think that's the biggest tribute I can pay to you. Is that what it feels like for you?
Yeah, I don't. Listen, we're all living in a world with no fans. You know, when the stadiums are full, you'll hear where if we don't win football matches. You know, Blackburn Rovers fans of a certain generation, of a certain age, remember Shearer and Sutton, and me and Ryu remember Ripley. You know, and that Tim Sherwood, that team that won the Premier League, and whatever we do might not be good enough for some supporters, but and who they blame. Generally, the manager gets the stick if the team's not winning. But at Blackburn, for a long time, the owner's got the stick. Because when they took over, the team were pretty comfortably embedded mid-table in the Premier League, and Big Sam was in charge, and they were doing okay. And to the point of where I started this conversation is, you know, when I joined, we were 15 games from going to League One, and so I think that's where that came from, the mistrust, really. I have been to India 4 or 5 times. I have met the owners. I find them humble, honest, full of integrity, business people who run a totally different business from football and wouldn't profess to be experts in football. I think I hope that I've just brought a football mentality that really I just want to work on the grass with my players. I bring values to any job I go to. I live my life by a set of values, always have done. I'm from a working class family. My dad was a scaffolder in the steelworks, and I know what's right and wrong in life. I know what's good and bad. I know who to respect and how to deal with life, and that's what they get from me: honesty, openness. My team get that as well, and I think the owners understand that. And so if we've had difficult times, you know, if we go on a run where we can't win for a few weeks, I think they know that the ship's been steered in the right direction still, and that it'll turn around. And they do see the fact that we have been without 3 central defenders recently and been playing a midfielder at centre-half and a left-back at right-back. And I hope they see that. And I hope the fans see that. And I hope that we are all pushing in the same direction, which is crucial in any football club. There's no guarantee you can win football matches, especially in the Championship, because every team is super organised, every team is super fit. You know, it's a tough, tough league. You have to be right at it every game and hope that you come out in the top, the tight football matches, you know, a 2-1 win here, a 1-0 win there. But they're all tight. We started the season like a house on fire with 5s and 4s, like I was saying. But you know, as the trudge of this division goes on, the games become tougher, really.
Great word, trudge. I love it. Do you know what? Believe it or not, you joined the club on the 22nd of February 2017. You are the 7th longest serving manager in the EFL. I mentioned that as Wayne Rooney starts his permanent transition from player and retires last week and goes on its way. That's a long old tenure in the current day and age. You're not done badly, have you? You've been consistently. Where are we now? When did you start? When you took the Hibs job on a sort of
2004. I started. My last ever game was the playoff final 2000, where Ipswich beat Barnsley. I scored at Wembley that day, and that was my last ever professional game of football.
Epic game.
So 20, is that 21 years? 20 years, you know, we're into 2021 now. 20 years, it'll be 21 years I've been coaching, really. Even though I was player coach with George Burley in that season.
Well, I tell you what, Tony, imagine what it's like when you did some of the first broadcast interviews with Wayne Rooney and then he hangs his boots up. Feels like yesterday. Like yesterday. I could listen to you all day, Tony. Sadly, time's against us. I never need an excuse to chat, though. Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast.
Great to speak to you, Clem. Keep in touch.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
COVID-19 continues to dominate the front and back pages and to disrupt the EFL fixture schedule on a weekly basis, which in turn has brought the spotlight firmly onto football and in particular the action of its participants. Last week, you might remember, on the official EFL podcast, the league's new chief executive, Trevor Birch, addressed this very issue, and he called for players to be sensible and follow the government's protocols, especially around goal celebrations. But I'm afraid it's still happening far too much based on the past 7 days' games. Ipswich Town defender Stephen Ward has had COVID. And I get the impression, Stephen, from your point of view, it's pretty straightforward. Everybody, including footballers, has a part to play.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I've said it a few times throughout sort of this season. Listen, everyone's got a part to play. And for me, I think, coming down with the virus and the outbreak that we had, we've seen how serious it was. Obviously, the manager himself, hasn't been too well with it. So, listen, it's tough. It's really tough on everyone. And obviously, listen, footballers are no different. We've all been affected with it. You see, the amount of clubs now that have had outbreaks, especially since this new strain came in. And it's obviously affecting games and training and people being fit. So, we all have to follow the protocols. We all have to do everything we can, because it's not only in football. It's throughout the whole of the UK, the whole of the world, that people need to, stand up and be counted for a little bit and just do our due diligence to just make sure we get through it as safely as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit shocked that Paul's still feeling the after effects, because I remember him texting me a good, it's got to be 3.5-4 weeks ago. It's got to be in the week running up to Christmas to saying he'd got the early stages of it. And I guess because it's so in and around football, you lose track of who's got it, who's at the game and all the rest of it. For him to still be feeling the after effects a month later, that's quite a severe case, isn't it?
I think thankfully he's been able to recover at home and, still go about his daily life. But yeah, he seems to still, be just still getting over it. Thankfully for myself and most of the players that had it, we had it mildly, 3-4 days where we were struggling and not feeling a bit under the weather. And, once we came through that, we seemed to be all right and on the mend quite quickly. So, listen, it just affects everyone differently. I know people who've had friends of mine who've really struggled with it, others who have had no symptoms at all. So,
yeah, I mean, a very scary case involving Steve Cottrell, the Shrewsbury Town manager. And obviously, we wish him a speedy recovery, because he actually spent a couple of days in intensive care in hospital at the weekend. I mean, you're the bionic man still going strong at 35, but. Just to finish this conversation off, how did it affect you? You said you were affected for 3 or 4 days. Cool. What did it do to you? What did it stop you doing?
Just basically, it was a strange one. When we got the obviously we'd heard that someone in the club had obviously tested positive. So once they tested us all, I actually felt fine. I had no symptoms, nothing. So like you do, you sort of think, I'm either asymptomatic or I'm going to be okay. And then we were due to get we were all sent home, obviously, and to await the results on the Saturday. I think this was a Friday, the week leading into Christmas. And then on the Friday night, I just woke up in the night and I just felt awful. I was sweating, but shivering at the same time. Just real achy in my body. And then just from then, I obviously, found out that I'd obviously contracted the virus, as many of us did. And just didn't feel great in myself, felt fatigued, felt, just not yourself, just tired. But the one for me was just the achiness of the body. Thankfully, I know a lot of people lose their taste, their smell. That didn't happen to me, and sort of just had 2 or 3 days where I just felt really under the weather. Even just tried to get out of the house to get a bit of fresh air, and you just feel tired on your feet. But like I said, thankfully, that only lasted 2 or 3 days, and I was in continuous contact with the club and the physios, the doctor, and they seemed to think if I wasn't revealing new symptoms as the days went on, I was getting over the worst of it. And thankfully that was the case. And obviously we'd done our isolation. It was a strange Christmas. We had to isolate at home, just myself and the family. They all had to stay in and make sure that we followed the protocols. And then thankfully 10-12 days later, we started to ease our way back into the training ground and made sure everyone was feeling better and slowly back into training.
I mean, Why aren't more footballers generally following the goal celebration one? Because, I mean, I understand the euphoria of the ball hitting the back of the net. I understand what these moments mean. I understand the emotions. But I guess we all know what the line is as well, don't we, mate? We all know as we all know to pull ourselves back from certain situations where we would be stepping over the line. So why aren't more players generally across the country just going, this don't look good?
I think, listen, it's a difficult one. I spoke about it in the week, and you obviously take into account the emotion, you know, where your head's at, completely focused on a game, on winning a game of football for your team. You know, there can be certain circumstances where you score, whether it's, you know, the winning goal last minute to equalise. And I think that plays a big part in terms of, you know, people losing track of their mind and, you know, where they're at. And I think even in everyday life, I think there's so much going on, so much that you have to remember. People are slipping up and maybe, you know, maybe forgetting their masks, forgetting this, forgetting the distancing. And it only takes a split second to forget, and then it looks like you've done it on purpose. You know, even on Saturday when we scored, you know, we all ran over, and it took us maybe a second just before we all jumped on them to realise, right, you know, this is what we got to do if we want football to continue. And we sort of were fist pumping from a couple of metres away. But there was that split second where we were so, you know, in that moment of scoring and taking the lead that you nearly forgot about it. So I can understand, you know, getting caught up in the moment. But I think as time goes on, and I think you'll see it now as games go on, you know, players will start to realise, listen, this is how it's got to be. I think, you know, you've seen James Maddison do it at the weekend and a lot of players. And once it starts, especially in the Premier League, and people see it happening, it'll filter down throughout the leagues. And it's something that we were reminded before the game on Saturday. Obviously myself, you know, Luke Chambers, the older, Alan Judge, the experienced players, just said, you know, lads, if we do score, you know, let's just make sure we do it. One, because it's what we need to do. And two, it's a respectful thing out of, you know, how difficult the situation is for a lot of the public and a lot of people. And, you know, they want to see, especially, you know, even the Ipswich fans, they want to see their team obeying the rules and being respectful. And that's sort of the way we looked at it. And I think, you know, it only came in sort of last week. I know it was difficult, and some teams, you know, were celebrating at the weekend or sort of midweek last week. But I feel as it goes on and the more we get into it, and the more, you know, it's sort of reiterated at the clubs, and, you know, players will start to celebrate in a way that, you know, looks more respectful and is following the protocols.
I think you've nailed it, Wardy. It is that word respect, isn't it, at the end of the day. Mate, you're looking great. 35, squeezing every last vestige out of what you've got, eh?
Yeah, trying, yeah. No, listen, it's great. I'm really enjoying, you know, my time there. Obviously, there's a couple of us there, myself, Luke, who are hitting the 35 and a couple of, you know, sort of lads a couple of years younger than us. But listen, I think it's been great down there. What I've really enjoyed about it is, you know, it's sort of a different role for me coming in as an older player. You know, you have that experience that you want to pass on to others, but you know, you also want to play. You don't want to just be in there to tell the lads how to do it and be sitting on the sideline. I've kept myself in good shape. I've always tried to, you know, get the most out of my body. And, you know, the manager's brilliant down there as well. He understands sort of, you know, when a player might need a day off here to, you know, just go in the gym and do a recovery rather than being out on the pitch. So, you know, it's been down to the sort of manager and the staff as well that's given me the chance to be as fresh as possible and play the games that, you know, especially at the weekends and you know, Saturday, Tuesday is never easy. But, you know, I think the way they've looked after sort of us and, you know, made sure our training schedule's right has enabled us to be fresh come game day.
Do you think the sort of COVID stuff has interrupted momentum? I know you dropped off a bit after that phenomenal start, but the momentum, I guess, starts to go, doesn't it, when you're not playing on a regular basis or getting back in your groove?
I think it definitely affected us the first game we came back. You know, we lost at home to Swindon. They played very well, to be fair. But I think in terms of just that match sharpness feeling, you know, we were on a decent enough run in terms of, you know, the games before that. I think we only lost 1-4 and we'd won a couple in a row, and we were looking to push on. And then obviously outbreak happened of the virus and we were obviously all away for a while. And I think, yeah, we found that the first game back a bit difficult. I think, you know, when you've not played in, you know, 3-4 weeks and you come back, you're so desperate to play a game. I think we just seemed as if we didn't have the energy or the intensity that we usually have in our play. So I think that definitely affected us. We then, you know, had to regroup throughout the week. We had a lot of sort of team meetings because we knew it wasn't good enough that week, regardless of the situation. And, you know, thankfully we got the win on Saturday. But listen, it's been a tough year for every team. I think if you ask anyone at our club, the injuries that we've had, you know, have been, it's been incredible, the amount of players that we've lost, you know, for long periods of time. You know, players that have come back and then got re-injured. It's, you know, and obviously it's a strange sort of time in terms of the lads that were at the club last year didn't play since March. They came back, they had a pre-season when they didn't really know the season was going to start. And then you're just into game after game after game. And listen, it's the same for every team. And funnily enough, with the break we've had with the COVID, we've actually started to get more players back. And I think if you look at our squad now compared to what it was sort of coming into the Christmas period, we actually look like we've got a much stronger squad now again with the players coming out of the treatment room. So in one way, it probably derailed us in terms of where we were. But on the other hand, we've got bodies back. We've got numbers out on the training pitch. And, you know, the competition for places is very good again. So hopefully now after Saturday, we look to kick on. And it's going to be tough. I think we've got Saturday, Tuesday for the next 7-8 weeks. So, you know, it's going to be a squad game. And
yeah,
like I said, it's been tough, but you know, we are where we are for a reason. We know we can be better. We know we started well and a few things haven't gone our way, but you know, there's still a long, long way to go. I think people sort of get blindsided that it's sort of the mid to the end of January, but I don't think we've even reached the halfway point in our league in terms of our games played. So,
well, you haven't.
No,
yeah, you haven't. And that's, imagine what it's like for being on my side of the fence, because some of you have played 23 games and then Aki Stanley have played 19. I mean, how am I supposed to make sense of the top of the table and who's the runners and riders, you know?
No, it is strange. And I suppose the league table probably doesn't give you a clear indication of who's actually, you know, where they're meant to be in a strange way, because, you know, all these games in hand, if teams win, they can push up 3 or 4 places. If you don't win, you are where you are. So, you know, it can be a bit false at the minute. But listen, the only important thing will be the league table come the last day of the season. So I don't think you can get too bogged down in checking exactly where you are, because, like I said, so many games have been affected. So many teams have been affected. And I think now, you know, hopefully we can, you know, get through this period where, you know, through this lockdown safely. I think most teams will hopefully get through the worst of the virus, and you know, it'll just be an exciting run in, let's say, I think, for everyone, and everyone will feel they still have a chance of getting promoted.
Great to talk. Wish a speedy recovery from us to everybody who's still suffering a bit, will you? Thanks for joining us.
I will do. No problem, guys. Thanks a million.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Nigel Clough is back in business with Mansfield Town and Howe. His new club were winless when he arrived. They've managed 6 in his first 12 league games in charge, and he's moved them from the relegation zone to the lower hanging branches of the playoff places with half a season to go. But here's the problem I've got, Nigel. It just feels weird still for me not to be introducing you as involved with Burton Albion.
Well, after being associated and around the club for about 15 years, then it feels weird as well. But, you know, with the situation we had last March and with the pandemic starting and not knowing how it was going to pan out, then the best thing for us, for the club, was for us to leave and move on. And now we've got a new challenge that we're enjoying and looking forward to in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it says a lot about your relationship with Burton, I suppose, that you kind of tried to do the right thing for them in that extraordinary situation that they found themselves in. Where was it, last June?
Yeah, it was before then, March time, when obviously it kicked in and then we didn't know. And then as we got into sort of May, and the chairman, who you know as well, was very concerned about, you know, what was going to, when we were going to get supporters back in, no commercial income and everything. And so it was a sort of necessary decision for the good of the club and to try and keep a few of our colleagues in work.
Yeah. I mean, when you find yourself for the first time sort of out of there and, I suppose, trying to untangle it in your mind, that's a weird place to be, is it?
It was, because usually when you leave a club, you get the sack. That's the most common reason you leave.
Yeah.
Or you leave of your own volition to go somewhere else. So to leave it under these circumstances and to leave a lot of friends there and a lot of good people is still it's still difficult to come to terms with in some ways. We had a youth team game yesterday. Mansfield played Burton, actually, up at our training ground at Mansfield, and to see the academy staff and everything, and Aaron Webster's involved, and Keith Gilroy, who were, and Sean Barker's there, and to see all people like that that you no longer work with on a daily basis, it's pretty sad at times.
Can you stay somewhere too long such that it starts to define you?
Not sure. It depends. I think it depends on the progress you're making. The defining you is from the outside sources, and that's for how other people view it more than anything else. But, you know, my dad stayed at Forest 18 years. So did that define him as whatever? I don't know. But I think it depends. If you feel you're getting stale, if you feel you're not, you can't go anywhere. But I thought at Burton, having had two unbelievable years in the Championship, and you've been at Burton, and for the size of the club, to have 2 years in the Championship is just absolutely staggering and remarkable. And to drop out of it with just 4 minutes, we were safe with 4 minutes to go. It's still devastating, honestly, to this day. It really is. Yeah. And then to sort of, we were building again. I thought we were making good progress to try and get back up there. But nobody could tell that this was going to hit.
I have to tell you, and I've been fortunate enough to do a job like this for about 25 years now, and I was fortunate enough to present your Player of the Year awards at Burton for a couple of years. And the year when you'd stayed in the Championship and we did them a few days later was just one of the most joyous nights I've had in 25 years. And it wasn't because of excessive amounts of booze or anything like that. There was just pure, unbridled happiness in that room at the sheer scale of the achievement, Nigel.
I don't think many people outside that room actually appreciated the scale of the achievement either. And I think that's what made it even more special. We knew what we'd done. We knew how difficult it had been to achieve that. But to achieve keep our status with a game to go in that Championship season, and you say, you know, just to get to the Championship, you know, was it remarkable. But to actually stay there for a year was even more so. And being there, you had to be there to feel it and to really understand it. What it meant to everybody within that room.
Yeah, was a phenomenal night. So thank you for that. So you've done the right thing. You've come out, and then you find yourself on the search for a job. And that's an interesting territory to be at the present time, because there's a lot of the guys. Stevie Cottrell's a good example. Took him 2.5 years to get back. Chris Hughton probably did a year and a half. I think Nigel Adkins is coming up to 2 years out of the game. It's a tricky place to be, Nigel, is it not?
It is, and that's why the decision to leave was also very difficult, in that there's no guarantees you're going to get back in where and when. We applied for every, you know, myself and the staff, we applied for every job that was going. Thought about going up to Scotland and applying for one up there as well. So, you know, we're not just sort of limiting it to an hour and a half from the Midlands or anything. We were prepared to go wherever the work was. We applied for lots, didn't get a lot of responses. And then all of a sudden, Mansfield popped up. And I must say, I had an initial chat with David Sharp, who you will know from his time at Wigan and everything. He was very impressive. He's taken over as CEO in the summer, and it all went from there.
Yeah. High expectations, I suppose. The Radfords are obviously the owners there, and I think we know what they want to achieve. But I guess when you're looking around, there's a decreasing amount of clubs where circumstances are absolutely perfect, i.e., somewhere where you can go, where you're going to be given a couple of years to lay the foundations, or somewhere, you know, there's something at a lot of clubs now that's probably not 95%.
I don't think the perfect club exists in that way, honestly. I think you have to go in and work with whatever.
Why couldn't I summarise it as beautifully as you did just then? Why did I need to go around the hills and dells like that?
Well, we had 6 months to think about it. When you're out of work, that's one thing you do. You do a lot of thinking when you're unemployed, and you do a lot when you walk in the dog. You have a lot of time to contemplate and take stock and all those sorts of things, and especially in the midst of the situation we're in, when you couldn't do a lot else, couldn't go on holiday, couldn't go away, so you do spend a lot of time thinking about the past and the future, and it gives you I think a different perspective on things. So, but there is no perfect club now. You just go in and work with what's there and get on with it as best you can. But I do think that the owners that there are at Mansfield, and David going in as CEO, I think the club has got potential. Somebody asked me, I think it was a journalist, asked me not long after taking a job. He said, why? And I turned it round to him and said, why not? And he said, I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah.
I said, why not? Why not take the job? It's a good club. It's got potential. It's got good owners. Why not take it?
Yeah. That period, because there'll probably be a few people listening to this who are perhaps going through a bit of employment turmoil themselves as a result of circumstances. Do you go through a range of emotions when you're out, from that initial, oh, blimey, what am I going to do, to, I don't know, a bit of uncertainty and unsurety about yourself? What was the sort of sequence of events that kind of has taken you back to the point of re-entry?
Not to the degree of when you get the sack. I think when you get the sack, I think then the few months, or if you're out of work for a few months, we were fortunate the first time at Derby, we got back in after 2 or 3 weeks at Sheffield United. But after that, then you go through, it's almost a grieving process in terms of the range of emotions, of anger, frustration, feeling of being worthless, certainly, all those things come into play. When you've experienced it once, you know what to expect. It's not a nice thing, but at least it's like a long-term injury. People who get injured for the first time don't know what to expect, how hard it is to come back from it. If it's your second, you know what's coming. And it is easier to deal with.
Yeah. Well, and you also know that sort of fallow periods are temporary as well, that you know you've got the mechanisms to get over it and come out the other side, I guess, having done it once.
Yes, you hope so. And that's no different than when you're a manager and you lose a few games. And the danger is that managers these days, the first bad spell they have, they get the sack. So they never then build up this skill set or learn how to get through those times. And then you become a better manager for it. You know, when Sir Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger, if they'd have been sacked, after such sort of short spells, they would never have become the managers that they have.
Yeah. So take me onto the training field, or whatever your first meeting was with the Mansfield players. I mean, is that something you scripted, planned? Do you do it completely off the cuff? Have you got a formula? How do you tackle the first meeting with your squad?
Well, it was a bit strange because it was actually at Sunderland. In terms, we went up to watch the game. We'd had to have COVID tests and everything, so we were in charge, but we couldn't take the team. We could only just go in the dressing room, say good luck to them before the game, a little bit of input at half time, and certainly congratulations afterwards. So that was the first time really we met the team on the day, and then sort of the first meeting the Monday or Tuesday the next week, in the meeting room with our masks on, which was strange. Open the door, let the dog in. And that was the first surprise for them, to get to know the dog, because she came up straight into the first meeting, said hello to everybody, and obviously explained the obvious, that those who liked the dog would be more likely to prosper and get in the team than those that didn't. You've got to start somewhere, and you've got to pick the team based on something. So it was based on that early on.
Wow, I love it. You love the dog, because the dog used to be with you. What's she called again?
She's called actually Bobby with an IE.
Okay, thank you. I'll write that. I feel as though I need to write that down now, as you've told me how to spell it as well, with an IE. Yeah, I mean, is that for any particular reason? Is that
No, daughter. It's our daughter's dog, really. She picked the name. She always just said little Bobby, and she's it's perfect for her.
Yeah. So you did pre-plan that. You thought, right, what am I going to do here? You didn't just sort of go through the door and let the occasion find you. You kind of went in with something in mind to make some sort of impact.
Well, yeah, certainly. Yeah, certainly the dog did. I thought this, they might as well get used to her. You know, she's going to be around. She comes to training most days. She's been up there today. So they might as well get used to her on the first day. Why wait a couple of days and then bring her in? I said, oh, I didn't know the dog was coming in. You know, we'll get used to it.
Fantastic. So I mentioned the stats when I was introducing you. Having had the start you have, do you push the momentum as far as it can go? Do you just go, why can't we keep this going? There's half a season still to go.
Definitely, as much as we can. But we're also aware of that it's pretty fragile in football in general, and that you lose. We've got three big games coming up this week. And, you know, say you lose a couple of those, you're looking over your shoulder again at the bottom two or three instead of up. We always said if we can get safe as soon as we can, or in a position, you know, that's pretty safe, then we can start relaxing and playing and enjoying it a little bit more. So that's still the aim, because we are aware that people keep telling them we won a couple on the spin, and they said, oh, it's the first time for 14 months or something like that. Then we won three on the spin, and they said, the first time for two years, and it's the first time for four. They've won four straight league games. So just let's keep it going. That's the message to the players. They're enjoying it, and they're certainly working hard enough. That's not been a problem from day one.
Yeah. I mean, and everybody seems to have had a blip at the the top end as well. You know, Cambridge started the season well, then fell back. Obviously, Newport and Cheltenham have been dropping a lot of points. In fact, I'll tell you, when Forest Green took the lead last weekend, they went to the top of the table. And when Port Vale equalised and took 2 points off Forest Green, they dropped to fifth. I mean, that's you know, just how tight it is at the top of the table at the moment.
I think there's 6 points between the top eight. And there's no outstanding team or something like that in the league. I think when you look through the AFL at the moment, I think it's unbelievably exciting. I think with the exception of Norwich, who seem to be the outstanding team in the Championship, I think everybody else all the way down halfway and below are in with a chance, which is brilliant. Premier League's as open as it's ever been. But apart from Norwich, in all the other leagues, there's nothing in it.
Do we put that down to these extraordinary times? Do you think it's having any impact?
I don't know. I certainly think certain clubs have benefited from no supporters and certain clubs have suffered. I think the grounds where you go to where you know, it's a certain atmosphere, then I think without a doubt those teams have suffered because there isn't that fear factor of going to certain places without supporters. But in general, it's very difficult to, and until we get the supporters back, hopefully next season, certainly, it's going to be very difficult to analyse. And even then, you might just put it down to a one-off and the whole crazy circumstances we're in.
You know, I don't gratuitously bring up your old man, but there was something in the, I think it was the Daily Mail, there was an interview that you did. And you talked about the fact that he'd been in management for 27 years. You're already at 22 and you've already done 1,062 games. How old are you?
Older than you think.
Okay.
I'm 54. I'm nearly 55.
All right, 54. So you're 391 currently behind your own man. And you said if there's one thing you might be able to catch up with him on, it was the sort of longevity thing. Have you got that in your sight? Seriously?
Well, it's the only thing that I can. You've got to be realistic. Let's face it. I'm never going to score. Well, I'm not going to score as many goals as he did. He told me that from day one when he got his 200. Did he get 250 at Middlesbrough in 270 odd games?
I have the figure of 204 for something somewhere, but I don't know if it's goals. That might be appearances.
Yeah, he got the fastest 250 league goals, I think, that's ever been done. And obviously with the management record of a few trophies along the way, then I'm not going to beat that. So let's be realistic. If I can hang in there longer than him, then at least it'll be something. It'll be some morsel of success by comparison.
I think you're very modest. It's lovely to talk to you. Happy new home. And I mean the one that you're working at, not your bricks and mortar around you there now. Give our love to Bobby as well.
I will do. We've done well to keep it quiet for the last 10 or 15 minutes.
One bark. Just the one bark I heard. Nigel, great to talk to you.
Thank you. Take care.
What great guests we have had on this week. I have absolutely loved that. That's it for this week's episode. A big thank you to Nigel Clough, Stephen Ward and Tony Mowbray. If you've enjoyed it, then please give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and please share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. I'm Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. See you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.